All right, welcome to Radio Naturopath, the call-in talk show about health and natural medicine. I am Fran Storch, ND, naturopathic physician. I'm here with my co-host, Ron Meniza.
Good morning, Fran.
If you'd like to participate in the conversation about natural medicine, you can call 860-486-9487. That's 860-486-9487. You can also email me at radionaturopath@gmail.com. If you'd like to listen to the show at another time, you can check out our podcast at whus.org. You can also check out my Facebook page, Twitter, and Instagram at Fran Storch, ND. So it's the end of Hanukkah. It's not Hanukkah anymore. So if you've got your menorah in the window, you're not supposed to be lighting it up anymore. I asked the Jewish authorities if it's still cool to light menorahs after Hanukkah is done. And they said, the mitzvah of lighting the Hanukkah candles is done. There's no reason to light it.
Yeah, I almost called the Jewish police on you last night.
Yes, I know. So it's, you can put your menorah away. The last night of Hanukkah was Sunday night. And so it is over. But it was a nice Hanukkah. We ate latkes. We got together with people. We played dreidel. It was good.
I made latkes.
And you make very good latkes. And, you can do it again. I think we should have we have so many extra potatoes. And Christian didn't get any, so I think we need to have Christian over and make potatoes.
Right.
Make more latkes.
We need to do something before they start growing extra potato spud, whatever things.
I talked about the benefits of potatoes last week. And so, talking about how, when you talk about fat loss and people's concerned about eating too many carbs and how the ketogenic diet is extremely popular right now, I have to wonder how much of weight gain is all about just people are doing too much of the wrong things, or too much of stuff that keeps their fat on, and they don't necessarily have to go ketogenic, and they don't necessarily, now people who do ketogenic diets, if you are of that body type, ketogenic diet works. It really does. It just depends on what your goals are and what you want to do. So we might want to go back to revisiting the ketogenic diet and what it's. We definitely have talked about it in the past and who it's good for, whether it's good for you. My opinion is it's not good for everybody. It's good for some people, and therefore, if you're like potatoes, are not the enemy. Eating too much starch and sugar is going to keep you heavier in general if you're eating too much starch and sugar for you. But potatoes on their own, if you eat a little bit of potato, especially if you're not deep frying it, you're either baking it in some nice olive oil or coconut oil, or you're boiling it or baking it with nothing on it. You know, a little bit of potato has resistant starch in it. It has a carbohydrate that's slowly absorbed. It keeps you fuller. So it might actually help with your fat loss goals, and it might actually help you to regulate your weight. If you eat too many of them or too much of them, that can be an issue. All right, so that's potatoes. So that's not what I wanted to talk about today. What I wanted to talk about today, actually, so you men can enjoy the holiday season a little bit more, I wanted to talk about erectile dysfunction. So
yeah.
I haven't covered erectile dysfunction in a while, and so I'd like to talk about it. So, did you know that erectile dysfunction happens to? It's extremely common. It's highly age dependent. Oh, be quiet. It's highly age dependent, and the prevalence of moderate to complete rises from approximately 22% at age 40 to 49% by age 70. So almost half of men have it. And it depends on what stats you hear. I was just listening
to
50%. For sure. Wow. But at 70, at age 70.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Yeah. So it's 49% by age 70 because, the things that happen to cause it get worse as you age. So that's why that happens. I heard another stat. There's one of those websites that men can go to, and I'll talk about this interesting phenomenon, that quoted a stat of 52%. They said 52% of men in the United States have erectile dysfunction. And I wonder, that's an interesting statistic. I'm not sure where they got that statistic from. I'm seeing different stats all over the place, but one stat I'm seeing is 49% by the age of 70. So So it depends on what you mean by dysfunction. It's because there's levels, because there's the inability, the complete inability to get an erection. And then there's you can get one, but you don't have staying power. You can get one, but if you don't have your orgasm very quickly, you lose it in the course of intercourse. So so men have different issues in terms of that. But why is it so incredibly common? It's, you know, that we're, you know, half of men, by the time you hit 70, there's one stat that says that half of men have it. So, and I'll tell you, it's not rocket science.
It's blood flow.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is.
It's a cardiovascular disease.
That's
really,
exactly
right.
And not only that, it's the first, one of the first signs of cardiovascular disease. If you have erectile dysfunction, you probably have some cardiovascular disease. That's definitely something to look at. Oh yeah. So it's commonly called impotence, and I do not like that term, because impotence means you are not powerful. Potency talks about power, and it states that if you can't get an erection, you are not powerful. So I don't like using that term. I like the term erectile dysfunction better, because it's specific. It tells you exactly what's going on. You want to have an erection and it's not working for some reason. So it's much better to call it that, because it's specific and it's non-judgmental. It says what it is. Why is it so common? Like I said, it's what Ron said. It's really simple. It's a cardiovascular phenomenon. The first thing that happens, it's really twofold. It's a cardiovascular phenomenon, and it's also a hormonal phenomenon. So let's do the cardiovascular phenomenon first.
Okay.
So cardiovascular disease, incidence of cardiovascular disease in the United States, also extremely common. So when you're talking about cardiovascular disease, you're talking about some level of dysfunction. You're talking about either blockages of arteries or just some level of dysfunction of the artery. So when you have endothelial dysfunction, you have blood vessels that are at least stiff. They're not allowing blood flow to happen the way that they're supposed to. And they may even have some blockage. They may even have some atherosclerosis, some hardening of the arteries that's going on. And so hardening of the arteries, of course, places that are the scariest are when you have blockages in the arteries that feed the heart muscle and blockages that feed the brain. So, you know, when you're talking about cardiovascular disease, you're talking about the coronary arteries, the arteries that feed blood and oxygen to the heart muscle wall, getting blocked. And you're also talking about the cerebrovascular system, the circle of Willis, and the artery and the carotid arteries and the arteries that feed the brain. You have very important arteries that feed the genitals as well. And if you have reduced circulation to your genitals, you're going to have erectile dysfunction, because an erection is a cardiovascular event. I mean, it's certainly a hormonal event as well, but it is also a cardiovascular event. You have to have good blood flow to the region for it to happen. So because when you're having an erection, what happens is you are having blood filling up the corpus cavernosum and the spongy tissue in penis so that it can fill and it can become hard. You've got to get blood in there. And if the arteries that are leading, their femoral arteries and the pudendal arteries and the arteries that feed the genitals they're either stiff or they are beginning to fill with atherosclerosis, you're not going to have as good circulation to the region. So the first treatment for erectile dysfunction, now when you hear of all the treatments that are out there, one of the things, one of the ways that you get treated is there are drugs out there, and the drugs are generally PDE5 inhibitors. That's what they are. Right. So, or if I'm sorry, 5-PDE, 5-phosphodiesterase. They work with 5-phosphodiesterase, and they manipulate the way that the blood flow happens. And that's what that's how they work. They're not hormonal. They're not hormonal treatments. They actually manipulate how blood flow happens in the penis. So your drugs that end in phil, tadalafil and sildenafil, which is your Viagra and your Cialis. Those drugs, that's how they work. They manipulate blood flow. They're not hormonal. So isn't that interesting? So if you are ready, so the reason that if you're using these items, if you're needing to use these items, you can also work on your cardiovascular health and improve your sexual function. And so the other side of erectile dysfunction is hormonal function as well. So one of the things that I'll ask guys will come in and they'll tell me, I'm having some issue with erectile dysfunction. Is there anything you can do to help me? Guys don't always tell me, but guys, if you want to talk to a naturopath about erectile dysfunction, we're good people to talk about because, you know, we're not going to give you a difficult time. We're going to, you know, we're very comfortable talking about such things. And we understand if you feel embarrassed or shy, but you can talk to us about it. If you don't want to talk to me because I'm a woman, you don't have to. Go find yourself a male naturopath and the male naturopath would be happy to talk to you about it. But I'm just here to say that I have no problem. One of the things that I do not mind dealing with at all in my practice is sexual issues. I'm very comfortable with it. I don't mind if people talk to me about it. Men and women, if you're having trouble enjoying sex and you want a naturopathic perspective and naturopathic help on it, I have no problem with that. You can come talk to me. I'm fine with that. And, you know, because I get down to brass tacks. I'll tell you what's what, and I'll tell you what works and what doesn't, and I'll let you talk about it, and I have no problem with it. So, and when you're talking about this issue, you want a doctor who's unabashed, who's going to talk to you about it, make you feel comfortable, and make it so that you're, that you have a good experience and you get some information that's practical and that you can use. So guys, why do you have erectile dysfunction? I'm going to tell you. It's because you have the first thing is you have a cardiovascular issue. So the second thing is there's a hormonal issue. So one of the things that I'll ask guys when they tell me about this is, when you see a pretty, so they're telling me, they've already told me they have some erectile dysfunction. I ask them, if you see a pretty girl, do you get excited? They're like, oh, yeah. Most guys will say, oh, yes, I still do. If that's true, regardless of how their penis is working, they still get excited. It's just that, Willie is not participating.
Right. There seems to be a disconnect somewhere.
Yes. The disconnect is more cardiovascular. They may still have good hormonal function, but they don't have good cardiovascular function. They're like, oh yes, I really get excited. I mean, I'm not that stressed in my life and yet it's not working. So they probably still have good hormonal function. I do have guys come in who say to me, yeah, I'm interested, but I'm so tired. It's hard to get interested if I'm working so much, if I'm not getting enough sleep. Those guys have hormonal issues. Yeah. So Okay. Now there are guys who have hormonal issues because of classic stress. Because they're eating the wrong foods, because they're overweight, that then they're going to tell you, yeah, I'm not as interested as I used to be. Guys who are really stressed, but tell you, oh yeah, everything's still fine down there. In fact, when I get stressed, I get more excited. Then that, okay. That's something I hear as well. So guys like that who are like, I get more excited and my function is just fine. That's something that happens. Some guys, when they get stressed, they also, their sexual function is just fine and because it's a stress release for them. And so they have no problem going there. And that's something that I see too. And a guy like that is going to have good cardiovascular function as well as good hormonal function. So if you get stressed and therefore you are more desirous, don't worry about it. Hopefully you have a partner. Enjoy yourself. If you don't have a partner, enjoy yourself on your own. It's fine. I'm here to tell you the other thing, the other perspective I have around sex and sexuality. Sex and sexuality is a part of a healthy life. All right. It's a good thing. It's nothing to be ashamed of. You know, if you believe in God, God created sex and sexuality for you to have pleasure. And in Judaism, we have a huge belief, that whole Song of Solomon, you know, Song of Solomon, some say it's metaphorical for your relationship with God. And the other thing I'll tell you is if you study Kabbalah is extremely sexual. It's a metaphorical relationship. Your relationship with God has a lot of sexuality associated with it. And sexuality is celebrated in Judaism, that if you're a husband, you are required to please your wife and not just to, even though, you know, the Orthodox Jews, of course, they're trying to replace the 6 million. So they have a lot of babies, but it is upon their husbands to give the woman pleasure. And there's like the Song of Solomon has stuff in it where you are, it is upon you to, and they're speaking to the man making pleasure for the woman. They don't go the other way for whatever reason, maybe because it's, you know, just because of our makeup, and this is a generalization, it's easier for men to get to the pleasure place. It's just so much more immediate and accessible to them. Where for women, we have to feel safe, we have to feel comfortable. And if you're not that person, if you're like, I'm a woman and I can go right there, mazel tov. That's not as common. But obviously, you know, there are women who are very comfortable with their sexuality and they can go right there. And same thing, they get stressed, they go for sexuality just like men do. So, you know, it's all kinds. I'm saying in general that that's not the higher proportion of women, that women need to feel safe. We need to feel comfortable. We need to not feel tired. You know, well, there's the joke that if you really want to turn me on, go do the dishes. If you really want to turn me on, go clean the house.
I do a lot of dishes.
Yes, you do. Yes, you do a lot of dishes. That is true. And
just,
you also
just, you know, stating a fact.
And you also cook a lot.
I do.
Yes, you do. That is all true.
Yay me.
Uh-huh. All right.
All right then.
So anyway, why do guys have reduced hormonal function? Well, it's a lot easier to be overweight these days. If you're overweight, you're more likely to have reduced hormonal function. Again, if you're overweight, not all guys have reduced hormonal function nor erectile dysfunction, even though they're overweight. But if you're eating a diet that's too high in starch and sugar and you're not getting enough exercise, you're going to be more likely to have problems with both the cardiovascular side and the hormonal side. And why the hormonal side? Well, obviously, just like with women, if you have too many stress hormones running around, stress hormones suppress reproductive function. Stress hormones suppress thyroid function. And so you need all of your hormones to be in balance in order to have good sexual function. So if you're making a lot of cortisol, your body's going to be in fight or flight. The cortisol is going to dominate. You're not going to have as good function of your FSH and your LH to make sperm and also to make testosterone. And because if you're in a place where you're in fight or flight, nature thinks you're trying to run away from a bear. Trying to run away from a bear is not a good time to get excited and to have sex. So nature is going to take your cortisol, your fight or flight hormone, that is then going to be suppressive to your reproductive hormones and make it so you are focused on running away from that bear. Unfortunately, if you're a guy who's got a lot going on in his life and you're working a lot and you're stressed and you're commuting and you have kids and whatever's going on in your life to make you stressed, you still have that same cortisol and you have it all the time. So it's going to suppress your sexual hormones. The other piece is that, if you are stressed, you're cortisol dominant. Once you're cortisol dominant, you're going to be dumping sugar into your blood because, again, fight or flight, right? So cortisol wants you to get away from the bear. So the cortisol is going to dump sugar into your blood so you have energy to run, to do whatever you need to do to get to safety or whatever your, you know, primal brain thinks you're going to do. But if you're not running, you're just meeting deadlines at work or you're driving to your next sitting for because you're a sales guy or or
what
if you're
say?
Yeah right or if you're not getting any you're not getting some kind of exercise to burn the sugar that the cortisol has put into your blood, that sugar's got to go somewhere, and the insulin in your body's going to see it. The first thing it's going to do is it's going to take some of that. The insulin's, when your sugar rises, your insulin rises. Insulin looks at it and goes, okay, sugar, go into the cells so you can power this guy's energy. But if the guy's not doing anything, there's only so much that's going to get into the cells. And after a while, the cells are going to become resistant to the insulin. Look, I got all I can take. Stop it, insulin. The insulin goes, all right, you're not going to go into the cells. I got to put you somewhere else. So guess where it puts you? Takes that sugar that's in the blood, and it puts it into fat cells. And most of the fat cells, when it's stress-induced, which fat cells is it going to put it into? You know?
I don't know.
The abdomen, the belly.
Oh, right. That's why we get belly fat.
So stress
right.
belly is, mm-hmm. stress fat goes to your belly. That's mm-hmm. where it goes.
Okay.
The good news about stress fat is it's easier to lose than if you gain it other places. So if you start doing things to reduce stress and also you lower your carbohydrates, you lose it faster off your belly. So like women who are more of an apple shape, like me, Fran, I'm more of an apple shape. I have a sugar thing. I have a cortisol thing. If I like sleep a lot, go to Florida and reduce my sugar intake and get good exercise, I lose weight off my belly and I lose it, you know, with some ease. I'm not going to say a lot of ease because I'm not 25. I'm double nickels. It does take longer to lose fat when you're my age. But you guys, if you're stressed out just like us, you're going to put weight on in your abdomen. Now, what's the other deal with fat? So one of the things you see when I measure women's hormones who are in menopause frequently, they'll have some amount of estrogen in their blood. They'll have little to no progesterone running around. It's very hard to make progesterone when you're in menopause. And it is frequently you will see women have below the sensitivity of the test, which is why, you know, sometimes if a woman's really suffering in her menopause, you'll give her progesterone to take and it'll make her feel better. But estrogen you will still see, even though the woman is not having a cycle. Why? Because you can make estrogen from other sources. You can make estrogen from androgens. You can make, and your fat tissue makes androgens. Your fat tissue makes estrogen. You'll get some production from the ovaries, but you do get estrogen production from your fat tissue, which is why Susan Wee tells you, the herbalist, she tells you when you're in menopause, when you're in your perimenopause, it's not a good time to lose weight. Your body wants you to keep weight on to help to keep your estrogen regulated. And if you get too skinny at menopause, you're not going to feel as good as if you have a little fat on, because that fat's going to make estrogen for you. And that's nice if you're a woman. And it's also nice if you have a balance of estrogen. You're not going to have so much of a balance of estrogen and progesterone, but you do hit an equilibrium after a few years of being in menopause. And I think I'm starting to get there because I'm like 4 years out. So I don't feel like I felt, you know, the first year. It's, I feel better.
Well, that's good.
Yeah. But the other thing, so for guys, you have fat tissue. Do you think just because you're a guy, your fat tissue doesn't make estrogen?
No.
What do you think?
That just because you're a guy?
That your fat tissue doesn't make estrogen.
Oh, I'm sure it makes a lot of estrogen.
That's right.
Because it's fat.
It does. That's
right.
Exactly right. So if you're overweight, you're going to make some estrogen. And estrogen, if you make too much estrogen, that's going to affect your testosterone function. And you're going to do something called aromatization. You're going to make testosterone, and you're going to have an enzyme called aromatase that's going to turn your testosterone into estrogen. So if you have too much fat, that's another issue that can happen. So if you're that guy who's very stressed and you're overweight and you're working too hard, you're not getting enough sleep, and you have a high cortisol and all that, you might find that the pretty girl walks by and sometimes you're interested and sometimes you're not, and you're not as interested as you used to be maybe 10 years ago. Well, you may have a hormonal issue there. And we definitely have guys that we send to docs, you know, we do their hormonal tests and we put them on hormone replacement. That I have guys in my practice who are doing that. And there are certain, you know, their PCPs who will give guys testosterone to take if they decide, and they'll measure their testosterone. They'll see if their testosterone is low. And if you're a guy and that's you, that you're having less interest, Really, the best thing to do is to eat a good diet and get exercise. That's the best thing to do. If you want to be helped a little sooner than that, as long as you promise to get good exercise and eat a good diet, then docs may give you testosterone. You should be having your testosterone. You should have a whole hormone panel checked. But guys can take DHEA, and guys can also take testosterone. And sometimes all you have to take is DHEA, because DHEA will convert to testosterone, and it'll convert to other hormones as well. But that's a good way to go. You can get your hormone levels checked, and you can do bioidentical hormones. That's one way to go. All right. So your basic two reasons for erectile dysfunction are cardiovascular disease or cardiovascular dysfunction. Maybe it's not as far as disease, but it's definitely cardiovascular dysfunction and hormonal dysfunction. So how do we as naturopaths, how is this handled? So first of all, like I said, the MD way of handling it is you might have your hormones measured and you might be given bioidentical hormones to take. That's one thing that happens. And you might also be given stuff to, you might be given your fill ending drugs, your, PDE5, enhancers, that are going to directly affect in the moment, soon after you take it, it's going to affect the blood flow to your genitals. And that's how it works. And so that's actually a direct, it's a direct treatment for the moment. That's why you get these drugs and you're able to take them for an event that's about to occur. Now, the drugs ending in fill are not cheap. You can get discounts on them if you go to certain websites and stuff. I mean, they've come off patent so that they're not as expensive as they used to be, but per serving, they're not cheap. So it's well worth it to visit a naturopath, or at least, listen to what I'm saying and consider some of the things that I'm suggesting to you, so you may not have to use those expensive drugs, and so that you can rely on your own steam. I've definitely had guys come to me and I'm like, dude, go to the gym.
I was
going
to say, you can pick things up and put things down.
You can put them up and put, I'm picking them up and putting two things. You want to run after some, you first, you want to pick things up and put them down. You also want to run after things.
Right.
Yeah. Both of those things.
Or ride a bicycle. Or
any of those things.
Or
right.
Ride on a machine that.
So the
makes
first
it
thing,
like
exactly. Right. So what you have to do is explore your cardiovascular health. The other thing about sex and sexuality is that for you to have good sexual function, you have to have good rest, because sex is a combination of the autonomic nervous system helps you. The autonomic nervous system helps you to do your involuntary nervous system functions. So it's divided into fight or flight and rest and digest. So in order to have good sexual function, you have to be predominantly in rest and digest mode. You're going to have a lot more fun during sex if you're rested. Having said that, there are people who you might have an exciting experience where, like, you're at the club and you're dancing and you're having a really sexy time with your partner and it's really fun, and you get all excited and you're pretty hyped up, and then you have this exciting experience and you have to run off and you have to hide somewhere and have an experience. That does happen. And that's not so much of a rest and digest thing. So sometimes when you'll get sexually heightened. And I wonder about this too, that sometimes sex is more of a fight or flight response, because on the one hand, nature always wants you to survive, right? Mm-hmm. But so if you're in rest and digest, that's a better time to have sex and conceive a baby and like that, because then you are in a safe place and you can get pregnant, you can complete the act and like that. On the other hand, if you're afraid that you're no longer going to exist, you might get hyped up and decide that you're going to have sex, and it's a survival. It's also a survival mechanism, because, like, oh my God, I may not exist anymore, so I want to give one last shot, so I'm going to have sex. Because what do people do? In those end of the world movies, they'll go and they have sex, or when people think they're about to die, they have sex.
Okay.
I mean, This is a horrible example, but this happened.
I was going to say.
This happened on the trains on the way to the concentration camps.
Really?
People had sex. Sure. Because they thought they were going to die.
Right.
So they had sex. Yeah. Wow. So that's a thing. Some people do that when they think that. So this experience, because I've heard men tell me this, that if they're really stressed out, they get more aroused and they want to have sex more because it's a release.
I can see that.
Yeah.
I certainly can see that.
And so I think that's also a survival mechanism.
Mm-hmm.
It's the end of the world, so let's party on. Let's party till the last minute.
Right.
That's a thing. Also, the other piece is if you want to have a sexy night, one of the things you can do is watch not an erotic movie, but a
action movie.
You got it.
Yeah.
Exactly. Go put on some Jason Statham or I don't know.
Yeah.
Arnold Schwarzenegger, Tom Cruise,
Bruce Willis.
Action movies. Those can be more exciting for an exciting night than erotic movies. Now, erotic movies could work well too, but I think for guys, would you agree that frequently for guys, it's more the action movies?
Oh, I don't know. For guys, it doesn't seem to matter either way.
I see.
As long as it's not a chick flick, and then that's kind of a,
It depends on the guy, too. Some guys.
I guess.
Some
I
guys
know.
Like chick flicks.
I know some guys like chick flicks.
Yeah.
But, you know, they're not as exciting to me.
So didn't you like Harry Met Sally?
Yeah, it was a great movie. It wasn't something I would have, like, participated in to get myself aroused.
No, but if you went and have a fun night with your woman, you would probably not put Harry Met Sally on.
Correct.
That's too heady. That movie's too heady.
It's
a great
heady.
Movie. Nora Ephron.
Again, you know,
A lovely, Nora Ephron's a lovely woman, but I mean, I totally, totally relate to Nora Ephron. You know why? Mm.
Because she's Jewish?
An old Jewish lady, yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
But of course.
Everything she said makes sense to me. I was like, oh, yeah, oh, yeah, oh, yeah, everything. It's
Yeah. No, but, that Harry Met Sally is just definitely not something that's going to make me say, yeah, I am in the mood.
No,
it's,
but Jason
it's
Statham.
More of a, it's more of a, boy, I'm really not in the mood anymore kind
yes.
of movie.
Right.
Okay. I mean, it may make your partner really, you know, happy that you sat and watched the movie with her or him, but it just really doesn't trigger anything that works.
I saw that movie in the theater when it came out in the 80s, whenever it was, 1980, whatever, and I saw it with my boyfriend at the time, Chris.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and Chris is a very smart guy and very intellectual, and I had a very nice time watching the movie, and boy, did we have a good discussion after watching that movie. And we were all like, is this true? Is that true? And that's what it...
And that was the rest of your evening, a good discussion, right?
Pretty much.
Yeah, okay.
It wasn't super sexy.
I rest my case.
Yes. So the thing with the action movies is they're kind of mindless.
Well, they're kind of mindless, and they get
and they're
you,
exciting.
They get you hyped up. They they race your heart a little bit.
Yeah.
They get your adrenaline flowing, and you're
and they also get you to forget about your day.
Yeah, and they put you on the edge of your seat.
Yes,
it's one of those things.
Yeah.
Now I wonder if horror movies have anything to do with that.
I don't know.
That wouldn't work for me. No, wouldn't work for me either.
You have to like horror movies. I think if you're a person who likes horror movies, if you like being scared, I would guess that would be a yes, because it also gets you hyped up and excited. But I'm not a huge horror fan, and especially now that, you know, CGI is so good and things can be so gross now that I'm not excited about that. Although, my goodness, I love me some Midnight Texas. I'm a week behind on and Midnight Texas isn't exactly. Would you call that horror? It's a little horror-ish. It's more
sci-fi than horror.
Yes.
It's more fantasy sci-fi-ish.
Yeah.
I mean, I wouldn't call it sci-fi. It's more fantasy.
It's more but it has monsters.
Okay.
Yeah.
Here we go.
Some people, I bet you some people will use horror movies to get themselves in the mood. So you guys, meanwhile, we're talking about the edge of you. Go ahead.
From Men's Health, is it true that scary movies can actually turn women on? This is from Men's Health magazine.
Okay.
Answer, like a light, being scared is psychologically arousing And in the right company, it may eventually carry over to sexual arousal.
Okay.
Says Joanne Cantor, PhD, a professor emerita of communications at the University of Wisconsin, who studies the ways people are affected by the media. After the movie, your date may find your glances more erotically charged and your touches more stimulating. But watch out. Trying to scare her into your arms may backfire.
Yeah.
If the movie turns out to be too much for her, she may start wondering why you brought her to see it. And her psychological reaction will just intensify that confusion. There you go.
If a movie is too scary and upsetting, it's not, it doesn't work.
Well, it's the two disease, you know, too much, too, you know.
Yeah.
It's one of those things.
It depends on what it is. If it's too much, if it's just horror for horror's sake, that doesn't work for me. But if it's a good story and it's suspenseful, then it's not so much horror. And that's the Midnight Texas kind of has some sexy stuff going on. And it's also, it's got some intrigue and mystery and interesting stuff. And it's not pure horror. That's not the point of it.
No.
And it's got some nice characters that you care about.
But Alfred Hitchcock did some really interesting things that would have, you know, brought you to the edge of the seat and then you'd drop back.
Watching Psycho would not, just for your information, if you wanted to have a pleasant evening, watching Psycho would not do it for me. Watching The Birds, no.
No.
No, thank you.
Not going to do it.
Okay. And it would, I would sooner watch James Bond or Jason Statham.
Yeah. Yeah, Bond.
And that might work for me, you know, depending on what it is.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So.
Okay. We should have a movie night.
Have a movie night. I want to watch Mrs. Maisel. Mrs. Maisel
That's
is on
That's not going to work.
Oh.
But, you know, not that Mrs. Maisel isn't nice to watch and fun to watch, but it's just not really on the category of what we're talking about.
Grace and Frankie?
Oh, please.
I guess not. I like Grace and Frankie.
I know you do, but it's not, again...
So
it's oriented towards not the direction that is triggering for like me.
I think I have a whole bunch of guys listening who are like, so tell us already, how can I help my erectile dysfunction? That's why they're listening.
There's 8 proven ways to increase it.
Okay. Yes, there's 8 proven ways to let me talk.
I'm going
to
let you talk
because you
have the answers because you're the doc.
Okay, so we're talking from the cardiovascular side. From the cardiovascular side, treat your cardiovascular dysfunction. The first thing to do is to do whatever you can to help your cardiovascular health. So if you're drinking too much alcohol, and you're eating too much food and you're overweight, you want to eat a healthy diet. Now, there are certain things that can help help you to be more sexual, but I think the basic thing to help you to be more sexual is to eat a good diet that includes lots of produce. It's to do the Michael Pollan diet. What's the Michael Pollan diet? Ready? Say it with me.
Go ahead.
Eat food, not too much, mostly plants.
There you go.
That's the Michael Pollan diet.
Right.
If you want to eat the diet that works best for you, whatever that is. If it's ketogenic, great. If it's paleo, great. If it's don't eat gluten, great. If it's high carb, great. If it's low carb, great. Figure out the diet that works best for you, that gives you good energy and makes you feel really good. I promise you it's not going to include a lot of saturated fat and too much starch and sugar. And it's not going to include a lot of alcohol either. By the way, drinking too much alcohol. Alcohol in the moment can put you in the mood because it takes you out of yourself and it can calm you down in the moment. So if you're not a person who drinks all the time and drinks a lot and you have a stressful week and you want to calm down just enough so that you can have a nice experience, alcohol can be nice. And if you're going to do that, my recommendation would be to do wine simply because you're going to get the benefit of the relaxation of the alcohol, and you're also going to get the lovely antioxidants that are actually directly good for your cardiovascular health. So I would go with probably a red. Now, mind you, red and white wine both have flavanols that are good for your cardiovascular health. It's probably the darker the berry, the sweeter the juice. Works well. So if you're looking to get anthocyanins to strengthen your blood vessels, I would go with the red wine. Too much alcohol will give you erectile dysfunction. So if you drink too much, you can have a problem. All right. So watch your alcohol consumption. If you're a beer guy and you're drinking too much beer and you have a beer belly, the beer is not going to be your friend if you're drinking too much of it and you're actually gaining weight. If you're a guy who, if you have no problem and you drink beer and your sexual function's fine and you're not gaining weight and you're getting a lot of exercise, then don't worry about it. But if you are a guy who is drinking too much beer and you're getting a beer belly, you have to remember that beer has hops in it. Guess what hops has in it?
Uh-oh.
Phytoestrogens.
Oh boy.
Hops are a nice herb that you can use. But you know what we use hops for? Hops can go into formulas that increase milk flow. You know what the Latina woman do to increase their milk flow? They drink malta. You know what malta is?
No.
It's that low or no alcohol malt beverage that you can drink. It's made from barley and hops. All right. It's like, you know, no it's like alcohol-free sweet beverage, and they drink it to help their milk flow. So if you're drinking beer, it can increase your estrogen status under the right circumstances. So be careful of that. So one thing to do is if you're having erectile dysfunction, drinking too much beer, you want to look at your beer consumption. And it's a really good idea to get exercise. If lifting weights, Ron said, pick things up and put them down. When you lift weights, you increase testosterone, and you increase testosterone immediately. So if you want to have a fun night, get your honey and lift some weights and then have a fun night.
Or go dancing and lift her up as you carry her about.
You could do that, but resistance training, real resistance training, you know, to the point where you're actually putting some effort into it. We're not talking light. Well, light weights, they can be light as long as you're actually getting some benefit from them, but that you have to be lifting heavy enough that you're working at it. And, you know, that weight is going to be different for different people. But if you do a resistance session, you will increase your testosterone immediately. And that's men and women. And testosterone increases sex drive in both men and women. So the other thing is if you have more muscle mass, you will have more testosterone around and you will have a better experience. So lifting weights, doing resistance training is a really good idea for men who have erectile dysfunction.
Do a couples Pilates class.
That would be nice. Couples Pilates class.
Because then you're both getting the benefits.
Sure, Pilates or yoga, but it depends on what your goal is. If you're stress reduction, so you could, well, I guess probably, I mean, doing yoga of any kind can be helpful because you're going to be in a situation where you're either you're reducing stress or you're using muscle mass, and either way it's going to work. But and then the other piece is you want to do cardiovascular exercise. So cardio exercise is also really important for helping with erectile function because that's how you're going to raise your HDL and you're going to clear your arteries out. So you don't want to just do resistance training. You also want to do some cardio. You don't want to do too much cardio. So doing lots and lots of cardio. So if you're that marathon runner, and if you're that marathon runner and you know you're not having a problem, don't worry about it. But if you are that marathon runner and you are having a problem, long cardio is stressful. It's stressful on the body. It raises your cortisol and it will lower your testosterone function. So beware of long cardio. You want to get enough cardio to give you good cardiovascular function. So, and that means that you're going to be getting, you know, half an hour to maybe an hour of cardio a few times a week. And it probably doesn't even have to be an hour. If you are doing resistance training, you know, 2 to 4 times a week, and you're doing cardio 3 or 4 times a week, the cardio doesn't have to be long. It can be, shoot for 30 minutes. I always tell people it's a good idea to do 1 day a week of long cardio, and the intensity does not matter. So one day a week, do a long walk. 1 day a week, do a long bike ride. 1 day a week, get on your bicycle trainer, your indoor bicycle, and watch a whole movie. But don't even worry about the intensity, but go long, because that will really help you with cardio. And it's important. It's actually important to not go hard, because if you go hard and long, You're going to raise your cortisol and you'll be at cross purposes. If you go long and easy, you'll keep your cortisol down. It'll lower your cortisol, but you'll open up your circulation. That's exactly what you're looking to do. So one day a week, please go long. An hour and a half, something like that. Even longer if you have the time. And that means go for an enjoyable hike, not a hike where you're competing to see how fast you can complete it, but a hike where you go and you enjoy being outside. That's going to help you too. So exercise, really important, both cardiovascular and resistance training for men and women. They're both important. So that's going to, they're both going to help your cardiovascular function, and the resistance training more so is going to help your hormonal function. And then if you're long cardio, that is low intensity is also going to help your hormonal function because it's going to lower your cortisol. All right. So natural medicine wise, you're going to be looking at things that help to reduce stress, things that improve hormonal function, and things that improve cardiovascular health. So again, the most important thing to do is stress reduction, and getting exercise, and then eating a diet that works for you. That's going to improve your cardiovascular function and improve your hormonal function. And that's whatever diet works best for you. If you have weight to lose, you may have to lose some weight because that extra fat is going to make estrogen for you, and it's going to be across purposes with your testosterone function. So different things you can do. You can take good old ginseng. Ginseng is a helpful herb. Panax ginseng is what we often think of as Asian ginseng or Chinese ginseng. It's what we call an alternative or an adaptogen. It helps the whole body to function better. And one of the things it can do is help with hormonal function. All of the alternatives, they tend to help with blood sugar. They help with energy. They help to moderate cortisol. Some of them help you to be calmer. So Panax ginseng is a good example of that. And Panax ginseng is also known. It's also known. It's helpful for regulating your blood sugar as well. Again, if you have high blood sugar, you're going to have too much insulin, and then you're going to have too much fat around, and that we talked about how that's going to affect your hormonal function. So Panax ginseng helps with that. By the way, American ginseng also helps with that. So your Panax King Folius. Panax King Folius, if you have a blood sugar regulation issue, I actually like Panax King Folius better than that. It's also known as American ginseng. By the way, Oplopanax horridus, which is has a horrible name, and it's a very scary looking plant, but it's one of my favorites because it's like a Gila monster. It looks much scarier than it is, and in fact, when you and nettles is like that too. It's a scary plant when you encounter it, but once you get into it, it's a wonderful plant because they're completely not toxic and they're really, really helpful for your life. So it's scary on the outside and terrific on the inside. And two plants that are like that are nettles and Opalpanax, which is Devil's Club, that scary plant I showed you that was growing in Oregon. Yeah. So it has Panax.
It's a big, huge leaf.
Yes. Yeah. So it has Panax in the name, and it's another alternative, and it has blood sugar regulating properties, which can actually really help with sexual function. Then there's rhodiola. I love rhodiola. Rhodiola is neat because it can help you with altitude sickness. But also, it's an alternative herb that can help you to feel calmer, and it helps with your general health. And there were studies; it's been studied to actually improve energy, reduce fatigue, and also improve your sexual function. Good old DHEA. I recommend if you're going to try to use DHEA. DHEA is dihydroepiandrosterone. All right, that's DHEA. It's made by your adrenal glands, and it declines as we get older. If you're going to take that, it's a good idea to get it measured. So have your doc check your DHEA levels before you decide to take it. And if your DHEA levels are low, you could take DHEA. The neat thing about DHEA is it's over the counter, and you can take a lot of it, but you should take, the lowest effective dose for you. And it really can help. It's a very simple thing, and it can be very helpful. And your body will take it and make other hormones out of it. It will make testosterone, estrogen, progesterone. So it's good for men and women. L-arginine, that's a nice thing to take. So L-arginine Arginine is an amino acid. It actually helps with sperm production if you're trying to conceive, but it's also about the nitric oxide. So nitric oxide, when you increase nitric oxide, you increase blood flow. So nitric oxide will help your endothelial function. So it helps to improve how your blood vessels behave. So L-arginine, and that would mean that beets are going to be helpful for you as well.
I was going to say, what food does that come from?
L-arginine doesn't necessarily come from beets. L-arginine is an amino acid, so it's in nuts and seeds, and it's in animal protein.
Okay.
So it's an amino acids are going to come from anything with protein in it.
Okay.
And L-arginine, unfortunately, if you have herpes and you have an imbalance, you have too much arginine, not enough lysine, you're going to be more likely to get herpes outbreaks. But you can eat arginine if you're not getting herpes outbreaks, as long as you're also eating lysine. And you can take lysine to help with that. But the big thing with L-arginine is that it improves endothelial function. And the other thing that can do that is beets and beet juice. So it's the constituents in beets that do that. It's not arginine, but it's a nitric oxide enhancer. So beet juice, if you're really trying to help your cardiovascular health, you want to drink the juice over eating the beet. Eating the beets is great, but you're going to get more concentrated nitric oxide enhancers from drinking the juice.
We eat beets every night.
Yes, I love my beets, and I don't drink my beet juice as much as I should, because beet juice is so good. So, like a good thing, if you're not crazy about drinking straight up beet juice, you can mix beet juice with pomegranate juice, and pomegranate's another one, has ellagic acid, really good for your cardiovascular function. All right, or you can mix beet pomegranate cranberry. That's another way to go.
Yep.
You can do acupuncture. Acupuncture is great. It's been studied to be helpful. So if you do acupuncture, you're going to be putting the meridians back into good function. And, it can improve so many things. Whatever's going on with you that's interfering, it can be helpful.
Mm-hmm.
And so yohimbe, you'll see that yohimbe is something that people use. Yohimbe is kind of like nature's sildenafil or tadalafil. It's it works by manipulating the adrenergic receptors in your genitals. So it's actually more like taking one of the drugs. But it works for some people. But because it's a cardiovascular stimulant, it can make your heart race and it can make you cranky. So it's actually more of a direct something you would take when you're about to have a sex act. There are other alternatives can be helpful. And if there's any stress in your life, whatever stress is going on in your life, that's something that you really need to look at. So that's basically some information for you. The other thing, so cardiovascular. There's a couple of other things that I like to use. There is a bioflavonoid called diosmin, and I have given that to men with erectile dysfunction, and I've seen them have good benefits from that. So I have compounds that I get that have diosmin in them, and they'll also have other extracts. They might have bilberry in it or cranberry or acai. Things with a lot of anthocyanidins that are strengthening to the blood vessels. But diosmin really seems to improve blood flow, and you can get it by itself and you can get it in combination with other things. And I like to give that when a guy with erectile dysfunction comes in. I usually give them a product with diosmin, because most of the time the guy comes in and it's not a hormonal issue. It's a cardiovascular issue. It's more of a cardiovascular issue. If it's a hormonal issue, I'll address that too.
So guys, here's the big suggestion from a guy. Talk to your doctor.
Yeah.
Just talk to your doctor.
Yeah.
Just, that your doctor, you have to take aside whether your doctor's male or female. It doesn't matter. Your doctor's a scientist.
Yes.
And they're going to figure it out, and they're going to help you with it. Don't be embarrassed.
And if you're not comfortable.
It's not something to be embarrassed about.
And if you're not comfortable talking with your particular doctor, find one who you are. Because
right.
A good doctor, like I told you, if you come talk to me, I will talk to you about it. I have no problem with it. I'll do everything I can to make you feel comfortable. I, Fran, have no problem talking about this all day long.
Right.
In fact, one of the things I had considered at some point was having a a show that was based on sex, where mm-hmm. we would have me as the scientific person and somebody else as the sex positive person. I have mm-hmm. actually bandied that about.
We should do that. It'd be fun.
Yeah.
Be a fun show.
Right. Yeah. So, I mean, but I'm talking about having a show that was the show, you know, kind of like Dr. Ruth used to do.
Right. Yeah. Oh, an actual separate show from Radio
Naturopath. Yes, that was just where I had a somebody on who was, you know, basically the sex positive person, and I would be the science person. And, you know, people have done that before. All right. So that was that was nice to talk about. I hope you got some good information today. And I thank you for listening to Radio Naturopath today. So you got some good info. I hope you're having a happy holiday season. And that if you're Jewish, you had a happy Hanukkah. So thanks for listening. You have been listening to Radio Naturopath, the call-in talk show about health and natural medicine. I am Fran Storch, ND, naturopathic physician, with my co-host, Ron Meniza. You can also email me with questions and comments at radionaturopath@gmail.com. If you'd like to listen to this show at another time, you can check out our podcast at whus.org. You can also leave questions or comments at my Facebook page, Twitter, and Instagram, at Fran Storch, ND. Thank you for listening to Radio Naturopath, your show where you can learn about the best of science and nature. We'll be back with more Radio Naturopath next week at 91.7 FM. WHUS Stores.